WVFM Burlington.
The radio voice of the University of Vermont, your better alternative.
You are listening to 90.1 WRUV-FM Burlington. Thanks, as always, for listening.
2 out of every 3 sexual assaults go unreported. College students are even less likely to report if they've been sexually assaulted. If something happened to you, there are people who can talk you through the next steps. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-HOPE. That's H-O-P-E 4673. Or visit rain.org. That's rainn.org. It doesn't matter what you were wearing, what you were drinking, or what you agreed to in the past. Sexual assault is never your fault. This has been a message from your caring DJs here at 90.1 WRUV FM Burlington.
You are tuned in to WRUV 90.1 FM Burlington, your better alternative. I'm DJ Io, and today I'm joined with Sparkbird to talk about the release of their deluxe version of Head Like a Net, which comes out May 22nd. How are you doing today, Sparkbird?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. So, May 22nd, that is the release of your deluxe album, and there's 4 new songs, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so it's Fog, A Person, Space, I'm So Negative, and Freer, Freer, Freer. So do you want to talk a bit about those songs, like what made you decide to include them into the deluxe version?
Yeah, so with the original version of the album, I sort of went for songs that felt like they were part of a cohesive story of pretty much post-traumatic growth and all of the things that I needed to process in a certain period of my life. And then there were various songs that I didn't include, and a number of them were ones that I felt like we were too theatrical or too, long. One of them, Free, Free, or Free, is 5 minutes long, a little over that, actually. And I just didn't think that they would maybe perform as well, I guess, as some of the other tracks. And so when it came time to think about a deluxe version, I thought, I'll pick songs just because I want to do them and not, you know, try to cater to what I think people will receive well, which you never know what people will receive well. So I feel like it's good to take those risks and, you know, follow your own vision. But so one of the tracks didn't exactly fit that, Fog. That track has been a favorite of one of my most enduring listeners, who she was a listener 18 years ago, I guess 17 or 18 years ago when I first wrote this song and posted it on YouTube. And this entire time, like when I had, you know, very few listeners, she was there and was cheerleading me like through all of that time. And so I decided to include that song for her, just to thank her for being so supportive for so many years when it often felt like no one was. And I feel like her advocating for that song all that time, you know, saying that it was one of her favorites, it led me to appreciate it in ways that I think that I didn't just on my own. You know, seeing it through someone else's eyes, you can kind of find more to love. Yeah.
That's a super sweet story. Wow. So
yeah,
you've obviously been making music for a very long time, but I feel like only recently you've gone like popular to an extent. Do you have any idea of why that might be? Like, I know that you're on Instagram and.
Yeah. Well, so for a lot of that time, I just didn't really know how to put myself out there. I mean, I tried, but I think I really resisted joining TikTok and making reels and things like that because it felt like that was something for, I don't know, like cooler people than I am. And because if you're not really involved, if you're not on those apps or on, you know, that side of Instagram, you don't really interact much with the content except to see the most viral things. And so I think it just gave me a certain impression that you had to be like really cool, or your music had to, you know, it needed to be more mainstream if you wanted it to succeed. And so for all of that time, I would just make videos of a full song and post it on YouTube or whatever and just hope for the best. And And I tried, you know, I would play gigs and things like that, but it was all very DIY. And finally at some point, I guess maybe it was 2023 that I was like, you know, I'm just going to throw myself completely into trying to figure out how to make TikTok work for me and post a ton. And I really had no idea what I was doing. And I still thought, oh, this is for cool people. and I didn't know, I didn't understand that there were like niches that I couldn't even imagine, like the one that I'm in now, which is exactly where I am very happy to be, like a fandom oriented space that feels like where I would be if I were not making music. It feels like this is home. I didn't find them. They found me, and it was, yeah. I feel like it was such, just such a blessing to be found by cosplayers and artists. And it's like everything that I had hoped for. But there's, if you look up like how to promote your song or something, no one's going to tell you, here's how to reach the theatrical people. Cause that's not what most people are doing. So you kind of, for an artist like me, you kind of have to like figure it all out from scratch.
Yeah. I feel like theatrical is a great way to describe your music and like the niche you're in. Like that's a very fitting word. But on the topic of your social media presence, like I was thinking specifically about Mayday because the way I was introduced to you was one of those reels about like, hey, here's this song for your pirate OC. But when I was looking at the actual lyrics, like especially that Cult of Domesticity part, like I think that kind of echoes back to what you were talking about earlier. About the album being like growing from trauma and stuff. So do you think like kind of the way you market kind of influences how people see your work or interpret it?
Yeah. Well, and I think that I feel like that really gets at the perspective shift that I had, which was before reaching this community, and finding out that I kind of had permission to do storytelling in the way that I wanted to. I guess it's like before that I thought I needed to be really interesting and appealing personally, and that would be the gateway to people listening to my music. And what I found out was that the goal, well, my new goal is how can my music serve other people and like inspire them, and which is kind of what I wanted all along. I just didn't think that was a viable path, I guess. I had no like evidence to go off of that you could be like, here is a song that fits this kind of character. I just thought that we were smaller in numbers and that there wouldn't be so many people who resonate with that. So I think that now really I am just so excited to see art inspiring art, because that's exactly how I create, is, you know, everything I'm reading and listening to and watching, it all influences what I'm making. And it's so exciting to see other people continue the conversation in their own work based on my work.
Yeah. I gotta ask, what are you reading, watching, listening to right now that's inspiring you?
Well, I'm reading The Picture of Dorian Gray. And for the first time, which I've always meant to read it, and I feel like especially the themes of aging and queerness and everything, and the intersection of aging and queerness is something that I'm thinking about a lot as I age queerly. So I'm very curious to see if it will inspire some songs. And then what I'm watching, I'm currently rewatching Steven Universe, which,
classic.
It actually, it influenced a couple of the songs that are coming out on the deluxe album, A Person, and did it influence? I think it influenced Space for sure in terms of, I mean, well, Space, you know, Steven Universe involves space, and you know, the songwriting style, I feel like the theatricality and like whimsy.
I definitely do see that just like looking back at your music that I've listened to, so.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Steven Universe character or one you relate to the most?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think on my rewatch, Well, I always love Stefani. Like the non-binary representation, I feel like that was formative for me. And but I really love Peridot. Like even more, I always liked Peridot, but like on this rewatch, I love her even more. Yeah. Just feeling, you know, the fish out of water feeling, I guess, is just, she really embodies that so well.
Yeah. That is a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a red flag, but White Diamond was my favorite for a while. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, okay. But she's like such a diva and so she imposing. Yeah. So I can see that. Yeah. Like, I would love, I think it would be fun to, I really want to enter like my villain era of songwriting. Ooh. And I feel like White Diamond would be a fun perspective to write from.
Oh, absolutely. That would be such a cool album idea. Like.
Yeah.
All right, but in terms of your other music writing, you collabed with Rabbitology on Praybird's The Watched version, and what was that like? Because that's kind of like a darker toned song in a way.
It is, yeah. And so the song existed as, you know, Watcher. What is it? It says Watcher song.
Praybird's or Watcher song. Yeah.
Yeah, Praybird's Watcher song. Yeah, and she had sent that to me, so that already was. Well, no, it was before it was out. She sent it to me and was like, maybe at some point you'd be interested in writing some other stuff for this. And and I didn't really know what to do. I'd never done that kind of thing before. And so I put it off and put it off. And then finally I just went in to record something and I didn't know what I was going to record, which is, that is like unheard of for me. I know that some artists, that's all they do is just show up and like figure it out right there. But that was... it was such a leap of faith for me, I guess, leap of faith in myself. And I sat down and spent a couple hours just writing things down and managed to figure out something to record. And she didn't really give any expectation for what I would add to it, but I wanted to bring the Watched perspective to it.
Yeah.
'Cause I felt like that was, that was the opening, I guess, that I saw.
Wow. Well, they're super interesting to listen to side by side and like compare the different details that you added and the ones that Rabbitology did. So
yeah,
they're very cool songs.
Thank you. Yeah. And I saw it as an opportunity also to write something that was influenced by a fandom that my listeners dragged me into, which was the Life series. Yeah, and it's a Minecraft YouTube series that I did not know existed until my song November blew up. So it's been a few years now, and it's funny because now people come to my shows and they're like, you got me into the Life series. And so I guess that's the mark of truly being in the fandom. 'Cause I'm no longer the one who was influenced. I'm now influencing.
Wow. That is super cool. Like, yeah, I guess you really are in the fandom now.
Yeah.
So what else, like, is there anything else you're working on right now? Like, what's kind of your upcoming past the deluxe version? Mm-hmm. Like, do you know yet or no?
I know a little bit. There's a song that is also influenced by the Life series. There's just so much lore there. And it's actually Watcher related, but like a fallen Watcher. So it will be an interesting kind of, there will be a connection to Praybird's, I feel like, but that is one that I want to record soon. And beyond that, I've mostly been, you know, focused on the deluxe album, and on the album itself for the past, you know, year or even longer. It's been such a long time coming. And so I have one project that I can't really talk about that I am sort of vaguely working on, and I think we'll be able to work on more once the album finishes coming out. But beyond that, I really want to do more writing in sort of areas of like representing habitats that are underrepresented in art, like wetlands and deserts. And, you know, not in terms of, you know, the topic of the song, but just in terms of details mentioned. And and kind of maybe like the intersection of daily life and myth and like the sacred and like transcendent themes is something that interests me. And then, as I mentioned, aging, I feel like that's something that, and just having a body, that's always something I come back to, I guess.
I mean, hey, everyone has a body, so everyone can relate.
And there's so many ups and downs of having a body.
When you talk about like using details from wetlands and stuff, do you go visit wetlands, or like how do you kind of like get in touch with those kinds of habitats? Like
I'm a big fan of wetlands. I feel like that's the number one kind of natural area to go to if you want to see the highest diversity of birds. And since I'm a big birder, that's, it tends to be, if I'm on tour, I'm always trying to stop by wetlands, just to recharge and have some time to decompress. And yeah, wetlands, it's like big bang for your buck, I feel like, if you're gonna go anywhere in nature, cause, especially in summer, just because in summer, I feel like it's so much harder to see birds just, you know, anywhere you go. I feel like at a wetland, you'll still see some species that like to be out on the water.
So I guess that's a good PSA to look into your local wetlands around Burlington, wherever you're listening from.
Yes, absolutely.
So you like to visit wetlands, and like, since you're a big birder, like, is that kind of what inspired your artist name, Sparkbird? Like, what's the story behind
that? It is. Yeah, so Sparkbird, the term, it's a term in the birding community that means the bird that ignites your obsession with birds. So my spark bird was a Western tanager. It's this kind of, I think of them as like a feathered flame. They're very like colorful, yellow and orange. And when I saw that bird in Oregon, I'm from Oregon originally, and now I live in New York. So we don't have Western tanagers here, unfortunately, but there are summer tanagers and scarlet tanagers, so I still get to see some colorful birds. But but when I saw that bird, I was like astounded, because it looked to me like something that couldn't exist in the wild in Oregon of all places. But I figured out what it was, and then kind of slowly from there. But then speaking of birds, my parrot Georgie just flew to me.
Georgie?
She's,
Oh, wow.
I wondered if that would happen.
That is so cool.
But, yeah. I won't let her usurp the attention here. What was I saying? I guess, the Western tanager. That became sort of the gateway to my obsession with birds, and which I was already kind of obsessed with birds, but this, you know, broadened it and deepened it. So that eventually influenced my choice of an artist name. She's going in my shirt now. She's in, it's spring fever. She's like cavity nesting. The shirt is the perfect cavity, I guess. So Sparkbird, the bird that ignites your obsession with birds. And now I feel like through my music, I've kind of been a human Sparkbird for a number of people who've gotten into birds from my music.
Yeah. And is the tarn bird, sorry, I don't know if I'm, is that the bird on your album cover?
That is a cardinal. And I chose that bird because, so it's a special, very rare, version of a northern cardinal that is a bilateral gynandromorph. So sometimes they go viral, and you'll see, like news articles about this cardinal that's split down the middle, male on one side and female on the other.
So
I love that example of like nature not being binary, or I guess it is binary, but it's both sides. It feels like a little signal of it being a queer project.
That is super cool. I didn't know about that. Like,
yeah,
my roommate's a birder and she's probably going to be so mad at me because like, I know none of this stuff. Like, yeah, that's awesome. So do you have any other favorite birds besides those or like, what bird would you love to see?
What bird would I love to see? Oh, wow. That is such a great question. And there are so many that I could say. Well, I still haven't seen a snow bunting, which they're easier to find here. They were pretty hard to find in Oregon. And I think I just missed the best time of year to go find them. But you know, they'll be back in fall and then I can find them then. Yeah. But I think in terms of birds that are returning soon, I really want to see, it's been a while since I saw a cuckoo and I've only seen them once before.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that this season I can track one down.
Nice. Do you have any birding tips for people who want to get into birding?
Ooh, well, going to wetlands is my number one tip just because I feel like there's a lot of low hanging fruit. And I feel like sometimes when you are, like when I was getting into birding, I would go to like a forest thinking that I would see a lot there and then I would be disappointed. And forests can be surprisingly slow birding. Even though I love a forest, you're in Vermont and I feel like Vermont birding is like, I feel like forests would definitely be slow there. Cause I birded there once and I feel like it was, slower than I would have hoped. But then going to a wetlands again in that in Vermont as well, that was super helpful. It was more productive and exciting than some other natural areas. I think the thing with Vermont is it's just so much of it is kind of wild that it's like they can spread out. Which is great. But in a place like New York, it's like I'm in New York City and it's, you know, if you go to Prospect Park or Central Park or Jamaica Bay Wildlife Refuge, then you can see tons and tons of birds.
That must be super cool. I think the most birds we see here on campus is seagulls. So,
you know, I love gulls. So to me, that sounds like a dream. But
yeah. Well, hey, maybe you should come to UVM or Higher Ground to perform sometime. Like then you can go see birds.
I would love to. Yeah. Yes, that would be amazing.
On the topic of performing, do you have any tours coming up for the release of the deluxe album or no?
Not yet. Nothing to announce yet, but I think there will be some dates in the fall. Mm-hmm. I took the spring off. So I think the fall is looking like, I don't know exactly what it'll look like, but I think there'll be something.
Super exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I just have to plug it, but you should definitely come to Higher Ground to perform at like the Burlington local venue. So
yeah, I mean, I would love to. I've only played in Vermont once and it was at the Stone Church in Brattleboro.
Oh, no way. That's like one of the coolest places in Vermont. Like what?
Oh, it was so cool. Yeah, that was last spring. I was opening for Schaefer James.
Nice.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was my first time playing in Vermont. I have a song called Made in Vermont that I wrote. It's out under my name, Stephen Nance. Okay. So I was able to play it at that show, except that I think that almost no one who was there was actually from Vermont. I think that they mostly drove in from like surrounding states.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
If you ever can't find parking, that's why.
Oh, yeah.
So. Yeah, that would be definitely a banger to play here if you come back, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you mainly do openings? Have you done any solo shows yet or been the headliner?
I have done, I had one headliner tour this past fall and early this year. Just like not very many shows, just 8 shows. Yeah. It was a very small tour. But mostly I've done, support tours where I'm opening for a bigger artist. I think there will be more headlining in the future. Touring is just, it's such a big undertaking and there's a lot of expense to it. And so it's at this stage, it's interesting to me. I never would have expected that, at this stage, if I saw an artist who had as many listeners as I do right now, I would have thought, oh, they've got it made. They can like tour all over the place.
And, yeah.
But it's so much harder than you'd expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's everything to think about with like equipment and
yeah.
companies. Like, do you want to have audio guys travel with you? Do you want to hire people local? Like all that
yeah,
sort
there's
of thing.
So many, yeah, so many yeah. logistics. And I'm still a one-person team. And so it's,
oh, wow.
it's a lot.
Yeah. So are you producing, writing, like doing everything yourself?
Oh, I'm so one person team in terms of, I guess, management and like, you know, the admin and, social media, all of that stuff is just me. But I do work with other musicians and a producer yeah. and, so I do have support in those areas and
that's good.
yeah, yeah, it's great.
It must be very helpful. Like, audio production scares me.
It scares me too. I can do an okay job and I
Same.
Have done it myself in the past, but just my producer, Josh Frigo, he just yeah. makes every song sparkle, you know, is how I think of it. Oh. And it just elevates everything to another level. And I feel like that has made a huge difference in my career, just
yeah.
Investing in his expertise.
Yeah. So do you like normally go to a studio to record or do you have him come to your space or?
He's in Nashville. And so
okay.
we've met in person when I was on tour opening for Elio May.
Oh, wow.
He was able to come to the show in Nashville, but usually we work remotely and I just record in someone's home studio and track keyboard stuff on my own. And yeah, it's very a lot of the musicians actually that play on my songs, almost not everything, but a lot of parts are recorded just in people's home studios
yeah.
and then assembled. I think that's how a lot of people do it now, just because studio rates, I think, are, especially in a city like New York, are like
yeah.
just so expensive. I think the
yeah.
probably a lot of the main artists who use like actual studios now would be like people on major, you know, major labels like Universal or something.
Yeah. Are you on a label or are you independent?
I'm on an independent label.
Okay.
Yeah. Called Network. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've heard of them.
I had not, but Fish in a Birdcage is also on Network and Schaefer James
yeah.
is. And so, yeah, it's like with an independent label, I guess the biggest benefit is that you have artistic control still, and but like some of the support in terms yeah. of just some of the mostly the distribution side.
Yeah.
So it's not like having a manager, but it's having, you know, someone doing the uploading and some other
yeah.
like admin tasks on that side.
Yeah. So when the deluxe version comes out, will that be available on all platforms like Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube?
Yes. Yeah. It'll be everywhere. Yeah.
Oh, that's
and there'll
awesome.
there'll be a music video for the song A Person, which if you or anyone has seen the music video for my song Space, it's animated by the same people,
yeah.
Silvera Dash and Piranha. And, yeah, it's really cool. And it's definitely going to have nods to the Steven Universe influence on that song.
So cool.
Yeah. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. Do you have a preference? Like, do you prefer doing animated videos or would you like to one day do like a more traditional, I suppose, music video that's like kind of, I don't want to say live action, but you get where I'm
live
going.
Action. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've done a few live action type ones where I'm in it. And I do like that with animation, you know, you can do so much more without having to like build sets or something.
Yeah.
So I feel like it, well, and just in terms of being in it as the artist, I don't know. Sometimes that it can feel sort of like a lot of pressure, you know, to be like perceived.
Yeah.
And And yeah, I mean, I love the, you know, live action type videos that I've done. But I think I do appreciate that with animation, it's like less stress for me. In terms of having to like kind of perform and like sell it on camera, which is like, other than those experiences, I just don't have a lot of on camera experience. And I think that, like the director I worked with was fantastic and I would absolutely do it again. But also with those music videos, I got grants. Like I applied for grants from, the Regional Arts and Culture Council in Portland, Oregon. And that it wouldn't have been possible to make those videos without that funding. Cause it's, you know, you have to pay a whole team, which is wonderful to work with, you know, a whole team. But definitely expensive.
Yeah. I feel like the animated videos also just like really suit your lyrics as well. And kind of like the vibe you have with like the subsect of artists you're usually like when I talk about you, I often talk about Rabbitology and Yakelore as well. Since like you all seem to have a very similar, very dramatic kind of trying to think back to what you said earlier, because there's like something that really fit well. And it was about like the wetlands aesthetic, I guess.
There's some kind of, like whimsical sort of natural world, you know, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but it feels, there's like a storybook feeling, I guess.
Yeah. It's interesting because like the only other artist I've really seen do that is ironically Alan Walker. And like, he's an electronic musician, if you haven't heard of him, but his entire thing is like, he has this whole lore within his songs and his music videos, which are probably insanely expensive to produce.
That sounds awesome. I am not familiar. I'll have to look him up.
Yeah, he has great music videos. So they're all live action, though, so I doubt they're cheap to make. Like,
oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have any plans to like kind of like what direction do you want to go in the future? Like, I know we've talked a lot about like the future, but like, is there anything else that you haven't talked about that you want to share? Like,
I want to explore more. I'm trying to think how I want to put this. I guess I am interested in looking at more kind of like canonical text. I mean, like mythology and classic literature, like Gothic literature especially, and looking at like queerness and like desire in those contexts and like channeling that into music. I feel like I have often kind of shied away from like writing much about desire, I suppose. Yeah. And I guess just partly maybe because when I started writing music, it was, you know, even now it's so tumultuous, I feel like, for queer artists. And I think that just coming from my background, I suppose, and it just maybe didn't feel as safe of like an area to explore. But I think that I've written about so many things at this point, and it feels like there's a lot that it feels like an area that I have like hidden or something. And sometimes I wonder why that is. And I feel like there's like shame and stuff to be kind of like explored and uncovered. And I think that it would be good for me because music is usually where I process. And so if there's an area that I've been kind of avoiding, I feel like that tells me something.
Yeah. And the fact that you share your music as well, like I feel like that shame of like being queer, like that's definitely something I've experienced. So like that definitely would relate to a bunch of people. So like kind of going back to what you said earlier about like now you're inspiring other people with your music to kind of like show their creativity and add on to the story in a way. So,
Yeah.
So is that kind of like the goal, to like both open yourself up and also like help people like see or maybe explore their own themes through your music?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, I feel like such a gift, that part of it, is seeing what other people create in response to what I'm doing. Yeah. And the way that they apply what I like my songs to their characters and just all of that is such a, it's just so meaningful to me. And so I just feel so lucky that, that such creative people have found my music. And I hope that, that anything that I do in the future will continue to feed into that.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely see you keep growing, like evidently since like, especially with this upcoming deluxe release, like that's super exciting. Like I think I congratulated you over email, but again, congratulations. It's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been, I mean, most of these songs were written 10 years ago. And in fact, yeah, pretty much all of them, except for the one that was written like 17 years ago. So it's taken me a long time to turn it into an album. Mostly just because making music is very expensive to do it like in a way that is very polished and professional and, you know, that people will want to listen to.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people who are trying to get to that point or trying to like figure out like, okay, I want to make music, but I can't really afford to right now. Or like, what's a good way to like get into it when you don't have a ton of resources?
That is a great question. And I think that probably now we're in a better place in terms of like software that's available to make really high quality sounding music without breaking the bank. I mean, I know that a lot of Rabbitology's early uploads were they're labeled dorm demo.
Yeah.
And these were ones that she just produced herself in her room. And I definitely, you know, I've released a lot of music that I produced myself, but I think that the work that I'm releasing that's produced by someone else has been stronger in terms of the production.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you are wanting to do it, you know, do it with what you have and what you can find. And, and I still think that's worthwhile, you know, and you can always come back to the songs later if you want to, you know, approach them in a different way once you've learned more or once you have, you know, more connections or something to people who can help. I think that there's so much more that I could do. I just get intimidated. And I think that, I think that's like all the more reason to like, if you are like for young people, like very young people, especially like teenagers, it's like, you know, let yourself be obsessed with learning how to make, like how to, arrange and produce audio. Like that's such a, I think that you could really go deep and learn a ton and like there's less of the sense of, you know, your looming mortality that, that prevents you from like, as you get older, I feel like starting, you know, embarking on that kind of like side quest can feel like even more daunting. But I guess no matter what age you are, there's still the feeling that you're running out of time, like at all times.
Yeah. Gotta love it.
unavoidable.
Do you have any advice for like avoiding getting discouraged? Like if your first songs don't do so well, or if they're just not sounding how you want, like how did you keep going?
Oh God. I think, you know, it's really hard to say because sometimes I look at my trajectory and all of the negative feedback I got and stuff like that, that I'm just like, wow, how did I manage to not give up on this? Because I feel like any sane person would have, just to look at the evidence of like how difficult it has been. I feel like I had every reason really to give up on it. And I don't,
wow.
I think, I mean, just because it's so, it can be so harsh and so, you know, success can be so hard to find. But I think that the thing that helps me is being a fan of what I'm doing, like being a fan of my own songs. So even if no one else likes it, like you have to like it, you know, make stuff that excites you. And that's ultimately the most important thing. Cause that's kind of, I feel like the point is what you get out of it. And then if other people do too, that's amazing. And that's a big bonus, but that's something that is still helping me. Because sometimes if a song, if the numbers are not great, like with Free, Free, or Free, that one's not like going to be my number one song, or at least at this point, it looks like it won't be. But I'm so happy with it. And I'm so glad that we recorded it. Like, by we, I mean like me deciding that that I would have people help me like with the production and playing other instruments on it. So I feel like just being in love with what you're doing, like being your own biggest fan, is, I think, really important. Because sometimes it can feel like no one cares about this, but like if you care about it, you're someone, and that's something that I try to remind myself. And another thing is that there are many ways for a song to succeed. And sometimes, you know, it's that the song you wrote will help you write the next song, or it'll, you know, maybe in 10 years or 20 years, someone will listen to this song and it's going to make a big difference to them. Because they're like my song Minor Holiday, it got big on TikTok last year for a while. And that one, so that happened 4 years after I released it, 5 years, like,
yeah,
it was, at least 4 years after I released it. And so it's just so interesting because it's like, wow, life is a rich tapestry, a friend of mine likes to say. And you just never know where something is going to lead. So I feel like, just finding your own meaning in doing the work and just enjoying that part of it and loving it.
There's a quote that I tend to live by that like is kind of similar. It's kind of like the inverse of this. It's the only thing worse than making a film is not making a film. And I feel like that applies a lot of creative endeavors. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
It's hard work, but it's good work. And then product is usually very worth it. Like,
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think that the main reason to, I feel like if you're making art, you're doing it because you can't not do it. Because it just, there's something in you that's pulling you to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. And kind of going back to what you said about like your song getting big on TikTok like 4 years later, like I feel like we're seeing that happen like more and more with like these older songs suddenly blowing up. Like Zara Larsson just got huge recently, and same thing happened to Chapel Roan. So
yeah,
I feel like it's, sorry, go
it
ahead.
It takes so long, and I think sometimes I feel like if you only as a musician, I guess speaking as a musician, if I look only to other musicians for career advice, sometimes I get discouraged just because I feel like it seems like among musicians there's more of a culture of kind of like faking it till you make it, and kind of maybe even to an extent that impacts how other musicians end up like seeing what a career trajectory might look like or something like that, if that makes sense. But sometimes when looking at advice from, you know, prose writers or from actors or, you know, just looking at other creative fields, because I listened to the audiobook for, I can't remember what it's called, The Actor's Life, maybe, by the woman who plays Pam on The Office, Jenna Fisher.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and that book really made a difference to me, because in it she talks about how, like, it took her, I think, 10 years in Hollywood to, like, you know, of just auditioning and to get the part of Pam, and then, you know, everything changed at that point. And I think Molly Shannon, a comedian, like an actress, had given her that advice, you know, like looked her in the eye and like grabbed her by the shoulders and was like, don't stop doing it. Like it can take you 10 years or more to get where you want to be. Like, do not give up on it. And that is something that has helped me, just thinking like, if I give up, I'll never know what could have happened. But when, you know, since it took me like 15 years to get to that, to November blowing up, it's like, it was certainly feeling kind of dire and like pretty unlikely that anything was going to happen at that point, but I still just kept doing it. And yeah. None of this would have happened if I hadn't, you know, just kept going at it.
Yeah. I think that's great about like listening to other creative fields, because like we're all kind of connected in a way. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar struggles.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about or expand on that we didn't get a chance to earlier?
I don't know. I'm going to scroll through my notes here. I don't think that I had anything else that I'm like pressed to say.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, what's the story behind adopting your parrot, Georgie?
Georgie. So I've had her for 18 years now. Yeah, it's a really long time. And I wish that I could say that I like adopted her as a bird who needed a home. This was like when I was much younger and didn't realize that like that there are so many birds who need homes. Unfortunately, my partner and I have actually like fostered and adopted other parrots. I feel like if there's anyone out there who's thinking of getting a bird, please look at the birds who need homes. I had a cockatiel before I had Georgie, and I had that cockatiel for I think 13 years. Wow. Like from when I was really little, that bird had showed up in my grandpa's backyard at his bird feeder, and then we couldn't find the owners, and so it ended up like she ended up becoming my bird. Aww. And so that was even before I got into birding. So I guess birds were always there. But after she passed away, I thought like I was so devastated, and I thought, you know, if I get another bird, it should be one that will live even longer. And then Senegal parrots, that's the kind that Georgie is. They can live 30 to 40 years.
Oh, wow.
It's fantastic in ways. And then in others, it's like, wow, that was a really big commitment to have made when I was much younger. And, obviously I don't regret it, but sometimes it's like, wow, it's really something you have to think about, you know, every stage of your life. You know, it's like in terms of touring, in terms of moving to New York, it's always something to consider, is like, you know, how will this impact her? Like, how do we make it the best for her? You know, and it's if you have a pet, it's just a big commitment. Yeah.
Yeah. For family. So.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, Sparkbird, thank you so much for joining us today on WREV 90.1 FM Burlington, your better radio alternative. Head Like a Nest Deluxe Edition releases May 22nd on all platforms, so make sure you tune into that, since it's going to be a great album with some great songs. So again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
city.